right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio here, the Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. We're here till 5 a.m. Coming up after 3 o'clock, we're going to talk about the Loch Ness Monster with Professor Neil Gemmell. Who is leading a team of researchers using science to solve the mystery. And then we're going to talk about the Loch Ness Monster's appearance in pop culture and then great monster movies. That's all coming up. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get them in now. We'll play them later. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and check us out on Facebook.com/Nick D Show. My first guest this morning is an old friend to the show. Terrific writer. He is the author of Big Hair and Plastic Grass, A Funky Ride Through Baseball in America in the Swinging 70s, and Stars and Strikes, Baseball in America in the Bicentennial Summer of 76. He is a pop culture historian. He contributes to several magazines. He's a good guy in general. His name is Dan Epstein, and let's welcome him back to the show. Dan, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Nick. How are you doing?
All right, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Yeah, it has. It has been a while. Tell everybody how you got started. Get a little background how you got started in writing and how that became an interest to you, and then the baseball stuff.
All right. Well, basically, it all started through music. I was a huge music fan growing up, and spent way too much time when I should have been doing homework reading Cream magazine and Rolling Stone and Trouser Press. And just decided that, like, you know, that was going to be the life for me, writing about music. And, kind of improbably, that's actually what happened.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that for most of my adult life, writing for, Trouser Press and Cream are long gone, but I write for Rolling Stone, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, and then about 20 years ago, I started, I had kind of a baseball, personal baseball renaissance. I've been a huge baseball fan as a kid, and then kind of dropped it along the way as music took over in my life. And about 98, around the time of the McGuire-Sosa home run chase, I really started getting back into it and wanted to read more about its history, and specifically wanted to read more about the 1970s, because that was the era I grew up in. And obviously, as a kid of the 70s, that, era had a special appeal to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of found as I looked that there were no books on that era, or very few that really kind of looked at it from the point of view that I did, which was that it was weird. It was kind of an anomaly, but it was really cool. And so that's what prompted me to write Big Hair and Plastic Grass, which is kind of a overview of the entire decade, all the changes that went on, all the characters that populated it. And then from there, I drilled down further with Stars and Strikes, which is specifically about the 1976 season and, what it was like to be a baseball fan living in America at that time.
Yeah. Well, they're both great books, and you and I are around the same age. You and I are around the same age. And
right.
And so, like, obviously, I had a really great connection to both of those books. And it brought back tons of memories with the players and the incidents that happened. And and it was a weird time to be a baseball fan and a kid watching, because there's a lot of crazy characters and some weird stuff that went down, and rule changes and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and we just passed the 44th anniversary of 10-cent beer night in Cleveland, one of the great ill-fated promotions. I mean, people talk about disco demolition, but it really had nothing on 10-cent beer night, where it's like, if you lure people to the park with a promise of unlimited beers at 10 cents a piece, you're really asking for trouble.
Oh yeah.
Trouble is indeed what the Cleveland Indians got.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember reading about that and just thinking, who's decided that was a good idea?
The amazing thing was that even after that happened, the Indians were still going to go ahead with, I think, two or three more 10-cent beer night promotions before the American League shut them down.
Well, they did get a crowd. So, like, and maybe in their eyes, they thought that was a success.
Yeah, you know, 20,000 people to the ballpark on a Wednesday night, back then, that was pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah. Yeah. And I, as you know, Dan, I was at Disco Demolition.
That's right.
Yeah, I was there. Oh. And when the crap started to hit the fan, I got the hell out. Because it was scary, man, you know? I mean...
Well, that was the thing. It's like, you know, and not even those kind of promotions, but like, you know, I remember watching the last game of the 1976 World Series on TV, and just like all the Yankee fans throwing,
yeah,
you know, lit cherry bombs and whiskey bottles onto the field, and I have a good friend of mine who was there with his dad that night, and you know, round about the eighth inning, his dad is just like, "We got to get out of here."
Yeah.
You know, that this is not a safe place to be. And I miss that a little bit.
Yeah, no. I mean, that crazy free-for-all kind of feel, that was happening in Major League Baseball at that time. And, you know, Hank Aaron breaks the record and everybody runs out onto the field. Guys are running out onto the field. That would never, ever happen now.
No. I mean, and it you know, starting really, I think, with the 1980 World Series in Philadelphia, that, you know, where in the final game they had the police on horseback ringing the field. I mean, that was pretty much the end of the party right there.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, of course, you know, in Philadelphia, that makes complete sense. Complete sense. Real quick, before we break for the news, Dan, I was honored enough to co-host a screening of Bad News Bears with you.
And that was such a great night.
Such a great night and such a great movie. Still holds up. Still the best. But I just want, before we break for the news, tell the story about the first time you saw that movie, because it's a pretty great story.
Okay, so, well, basically that was my window into baseball fandom, pretty much. I went for a friend's 10th birthday. I was in fourth grade. Bad News Bears had just come out, and so for his birthday, he wanted to go see the film, and his hippie parents piled us all into their, suite conversion vans for Dodger Chevy. And there's like, you know, 10 fourth graders going to see Bad News Bears. And and then we came back to his house after the movie, you know, and the movie was just a revelation to me, because not only, you know, was it just an awesome movie, but it was the first film I ever saw that you know, felt like me and my friends were on screen.
Absolutely.
Like they talked like talked like us, they looked like us, they behaved like us. And it really made me want to play baseball. It made me want to learn about baseball. And then we got back to his house after the film. It was a sleepover, and our party favors were new wax packs of Topps baseball cards, and those were the first baseball cards I ever had, and it really just kind of opened up this whole new world for me.
Yeah, that's a great story. It really is a great story. Dan, hang on, okay?
You got it.
All right, Dan Epstein is with us. He's awesome. He's a pop culture historian. He's a contributor to several magazines. He's the author of two terrific books about baseball in the 70s. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, some articles that he's written recently. We'll discuss that as well. We get the news, though, coming up right after we take this break. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue. We're here till 5 a.m. Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. You're here, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 3 o'clock news, we're going to talk with Professor Neil Gemmell, who is part of a research team in Scotland working with science to solve one of the biggest mysteries in the world. Is the Loch Ness Monster real? Then we're going to talk about monster movies and cool stuff like that. 312-981-7200, talk, text, wildcard, Wednesday requests. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/Nick D Show. My current guest is Dan Epstein, pop culture historian, contributor to several magazines, the author of two terrific books about baseball in the 70s. And we're just having him on to chat about some of the events that'll be happening up and some of the stuff that he's written recently. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Nick. Man, I want to talk about the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, we're going to jump into that after the 3 o'clock news.
So, oh, that was awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, before we move on to some other stuff, a couple of baseball things here. In April, you spoke at the Baseball Writers Museum in Chicago. Tell me about that.
Oh, that was a really cool event. I'd actually never been to the Writers Museum here, which is a fantastic space, and I would highly recommend to any fan of the written word. But it was a gathering with me, Josh Wilker, who wrote Cardboard Gods, which is a fantastic baseball book, and my pal Joe Bonomo, who is just about to come out with a really great book on sports writer Roger Angel. And so we all, Roger Angel was a huge influence on my writing and my fandom in general. So we all wrote or read a bit from our respective works. I concentrated on stuff from Stars and Strikes that has to do with Bill Veeck, because A, he was such a hero of mine, and B, the museum is located not far from Miller's Pub, where Veeck used to like to drink. So, and in fact, quite a few of us wound up at Miller's afterwards to have some drinks. Although I was bummed out to see that in the renovations of Miller's Pub, they have done away with the Bill Veeck corner, which I thought was
they did
religious. Yeah, so I don't think I'm going to be going back there anytime soon.
Wow, that's disappointing. I mean, I haven't been there. Yeah. I haven't been there in a very, very long time, but that's disappointing. Wow.
Yeah. No, that was like a play, like I, you know, pretty much any baseball fan from out of town, I always used to direct them over there, but no more.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like it was a great event. And you also wrote a piece for the museum's website about baseball players turned writers and some of your favorite baseball books. Do you want to share some of those with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that there's a long history of really boring books written by ball players, ghost written by journalists.
But, yeah.
Things that kind of give you the basic framework of their life that don't really tell you anything interesting. And on the opposite end of the spectrum is the books that kind of really follow in the trail blazed by Jim Boughton with Ball Four. I mean, I think you can go back further to Jim Brosnan's books that he wrote in the early 60s, but even those don't have quite the the tell-all juiciness of Jim Boughton's Ball Four, hugely influential book, and still delivers to this day. But other favorites of mine along those lines are The Bronx Zoo by Sparky Lyle and Peter Golenbach, which great insight into what was actually going on in the Yankees clubhouse in the mid-late 70s. And Joe Pepitone's Joe, You Could Have Made Us Proud, one of my all-time favorite books, baseball or otherwise. I like to describe it as a cross between Ball Four, Goodfellas, and Penthouse Forum. And actually, that was a book that my mother accidentally checked. Well, not accidentally, but she checked out of the public library for me when I was 12, not having any idea of what the actual contents were. But she knew I liked baseball, and here was a book by a baseball player. So that pretty much warped my mind from there on out. Also, the Wrong Stuff by Bill Lee, I think, is just an absolute essential a baseball read for anybody who appreciates their players being a little left of center politically and otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also mentioned Doc Ellis's book, as well, because Doc Ellis, of course, one of the most insane baseball stories of all time is go ahead.
We're actually coming up on the anniversary of his acid no-hitter. as far as we know, the only person to ever pitch a no-hitter while tripping on LSD, which I believe is the most impressive athletic feat of all time.
Yeah, it's up there, man. It's up there. But yeah, I find it was so funny, and the circumstances behind that, because he didn't think he was pitching that day.
Right, but kind of lost track of time, as one will under the influence of psychedelic.
Such a great story. All right, very, very cool. And there's another baseball related issue, that thing that you're going to be doing in July that sounds really exciting. Tell her what's going on July 22nd.
Well, out in L.A., I've been invited to be the keynote speaker at the 20th annual induction ceremonies of the Baseball Reliquary. And for listeners who don't know what the Baseball Reliquary is, it's a really cool organization that, again, you know, like we're talking about these players who are, you know, bring a lot to the game, maybe not Hall of Fame level in terms of numbers, but in terms of personalities, they're right up there. And this this organization really tries to celebrate that kind of you know, special contributions to baseball that are, you know, not necessarily be quantified by numbers. And previous inductees, you know, include Doc Ellis, Mark the Bird Fidrich, Bill Lee, Dick Allen. They actually have Doc Ellis's infamous curlers as part of their collection. And this year they're going to be inducting two people with heavy 70s Chicago connections, Tommy John, who pitched for the White Sox in the first half of the 70s, and actually in the late 60s as well, and White Sox organist Nancy Faust. So they thought that, you know, given my 70s pedigree, that I would be a good person to deliver the keynote address. So,
that's great.
I'm incredibly honored and excited for that.
That's outstanding, man. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That sounds cool.
And it just was announced that the San Diego Chicken is going to be there as well. So,
there you go. There it is, man. That is right there is the icing on the cake right there.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good day.
You know, it's a. Have you ever met Nancy Faust before?
I never have.
Yeah, I've never met her either. I wonder if people ask Tommy John if he is thrilled with the fact that there's a surgery named after him.
Yeah, you know, it probably should be named Frank Job Surgery because he was the doctor who came up with it.
Right, but,
right. I know. You know, it's like if Lou Gehrig had lived, would he be happy to be known as be associated with Lou Gehrig's disease?
Yeah.
From what I can tell, Tommy John seems to have a pretty good, seems to have a pretty good sense of humor I've never talked to him either, so I'm really looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah. Now, your baseball viewing right now, because you no longer live here in Chicago.
No, I do live here.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm just going back to L.A.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you moved back. Oh, okay.
No. Well, hell no. No.
All right. Well, you're here in Chicago. Did you watch last night's Cubs game?
I didn't because I don't have cable anymore, so I can't get the Cubs on my MLB package. But I did read the recap.
Brutal.
It seemed pretty brutal. Yeah,
it was brutal. It was the worst performance I've ever seen Hendricks do. It was way out of it. I'm just terrible.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing. They're a fun team to watch, and you know, and I'm really, I mean, Javi Baez, like,
yeah, man,
I'm so happy to see him really kind of coming into his own.
Oh yeah,
but I just don't think they've got the pitching to get it done. To go all the way to the World Series again. I mean, we'll see what Theo has up his sleeve, but right now it's like I cannot put much trust in that rotation.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not, you know, the same team that they were obviously in 2016 or last year even.
Right.
But they're still, you know, it's still a blast to watch. I mean, you know, when they go on a run like they did, you know, sweeping the Mets like that, that was fantastic. That was, you know, really awesome. And to come from behind against Pittsburgh a couple of times, those were good games, man.
And absolutely.
It's been a fun season. Now, you know, yeah. Dan, as you know, we are now the flagship home of the Chicago White Sox.
Yes.
Which everybody finds very strange, don't you think?
Absolutely. That's like that Ron Santo card of 1975 with him in a White Sox hat.
Yeah.
It's a bizarro world.
It is strange, but it's fun to have baseball back on WGN, though. I will say that.
Yeah, that's great. Too bad the White Sox aren't a better team, but that'll come.
Well, they helped us out against Milwaukee.
That's true.
You know what I mean? We were 5 games out, now we're 2 games out. So that was, and that's thanks in part to the Sox, which is good.
Yeah, no, God bless them.
Yeah. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Epstein is with us, pop culture historian, contributor to several magazines. We've been talking baseball. His 2 books about baseball, Big Hair and Plastic Grass, and Stars and Strikes, are both really tremendous baseball books, especially if you grew up watching baseball in the 70s or are fascinated by that decade and that time period. All right, speaking of the 70s, when we come back, we're going to talk about a Rolling Stone article that Dan wrote about Burt Reynolds. It's called In Praise of Burt Reynolds, the Last Good Old Boy Movie Star. We're going to have fun talking about that and more right after we take this break on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday, man. Yeah, get your request in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're talking with Dan Epstein, who is a pop culture historian. He contributes to several magazines. He's the author of 2 terrific baseball books, and he's a busy guy in general. And let's welcome him back. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
All right. So you wrote about, speaking of the 70s, you wrote about Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be.
Well, I've do occasional movie writing about old movies for Rolling Stone, and some new movies on occasion as well. And the film editor there, David Fear, thought I would be a good person to tackle The Last Movie Star, which came out a few months ago, directed by Adam Rifkin, and features. I mean, it's not an amazing movie, but it features an absolutely stunning star turn by Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
As kind of playing himself, but with another, with added elements to it. Playing sort of a washed up Hollywood actor who, bemoans all the bad choices that he's made in his career. And, that certainly is reflective of Burt Reynolds' career. I mean, this is a guy who was the number one male matinee idol of the 70s and really kind of frittered it away with a lot of questionable career choices and, some not great personal choices as well.
Yeah, he was. I think people who were not around, I don't think people realize just how big Burt Reynolds was. I mean, he was the biggest star on the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to look back and just think like, oh well, he was in Smokey and the Bandit, and he was just just played good old boys, probably because he was one, but he was an incredibly talented actor and took on quite a interesting range of parts back in the 70s. Not always. Not always playing a charming good guy. He's amazing in Deliverance and Longest Yard and Hustle and films where he has to deliver a lot more nuance and isn't just a bootlegger in a fast car.
Right. Well, you mentioned in the article as well, one of my favorite Burt Reynolds movies, he also directed it. And he's a good director, too. He directed several movies. But I love Sharky's Machine. I love that movie. I love him in it. And it has moments where it's goofy, but for the most part, that's a pretty serious cop thriller and I think a really well-made one.
Yeah, and I think, for those of us who have a certain affinity to films, of the 70s. I mean, that was 1981, but
yeah,
still has a lot of that kind of seedy, morally ambiguous aspects that kind of come with a lot of the best 70s cop flicks.
Yeah, and we should thank him for introducing the world to Rachel Ward. That should be another reason why. But yeah, no, I love Sharky's Machine. I think it's really great. And he was big, and it was interesting to see. Then he did start making a lot of stupid, like your Stroker Aces and
right.
which is, I think, maybe the worst movie he's ever been in, and Cop and a Half, and, I mean, he made a lot of really terrible movies. I'm sorry?
Rent-A-Cop.
Oh, my God, Rent-A-Cop, yeah. So, like, he made a lot of terrible choices, and he turned down a lot of great roles. He turned down the role that Jack Nicholson got in Terms of Endearment. And then there were several times when it was supposed to be a comeback for Burt Reynolds. I remember when Striptease came out. That was the movie that they were like, okay, Burt Reynolds is going to come back. He's going to be great in it. And then that turned out to be a massive bomb.
Yeah, well, and a massive embarrassment. I mean, I remember watching that, and as a Burt Reynolds fan, I was just like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I just felt bad for him, frankly. Yeah. And but then when he was in, he starred in Boogie Nights, which really, I mean, was a great movie and a fantastic role for him as, the kind of Papa Bear porn director. And that should have kicked off a career renaissance right there, and it didn't, because he hated Paul Thomas Anderson, who directed Boogie Nights, and Anderson offered him a role in Magnolia.
Let me stop you right there, Dan. And Magnolia is my favorite movie of all time.
And I don't think I knew that.
It's my favorite movie of all time, and I thought I knew everything about it. I did not know that Burt Reynolds was offered. But which part was he offered? Do you know?
I don't know that. I know that he. That's a really good question.
My guess would be it would either be the Jason Robards role, which is a big, heavy role,
right?
Or Philip Baker Hall, his role as the game show host. I mean, that could have he could have played that too. Those are the two parts that stand out for me. But yeah, I didn't know he was offered that. But I know he hated Boogie Nights until all the awards started to pop up.
Well, I think he still hates it to this day. I think he claims to have never seen it all the way through. I think his experience working with Anderson was just like a huge clash of personality.
Oh yeah,
and I think Burt was this old school Hollywood guy who just appreciated professionalism over everything. And Anderson was this, young filmmaker, trying all these experiments and making up things kind of as he went along.
Yeah.
And it just really stuck in Reynolds' craw.
Which is
actually, he supposedly had to be restrained from punching Anderson during one fight on the set.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. But I'll tell you what, it's some of the best work that Burt Reynolds has ever done. And obviously the movie's great. And so, it got him a Golden Globe nomination. He should have won the Oscar that year, but it went to Robin Williams, which I always thought was a mistake. And I was really rooting for Burt at that time to come back, and then and then he shows up in the remake for The Longest Yard.
I mean, you look at his IMDb page and it's just like all these just completely forgettable projects, but just like anything for work. So I mean, this Adam Rifkin movie is really The Last Movie Star is great, because it really it clearly Rifkin meant this.
Yeah,
it was a vehicle for Burt.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen the movie, and it's like you said, it's not a terrific movie, but he's great in it, and it's clearly an ode to him. And it was one of three movies that came out recently that had very similar sort of like the actor playing a very similar part, and it's sort of a meta salute to that actor, because Harry Dean Stanton was in a great film called Lucky.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's so good, Dan. And Sam Elliott was in a movie called The Hero.
Right.
And all three of those movies were, out at around the same time. I saw them very close together, and I was struck by how the filmmakers involved clearly loved their subjects and made movies that were, sort of disguised salutes to those guys. And the Rifkin movie is a terrific salute to a guy who was one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll, it'll pad the way to some other good projects before Bert has to call it a day. But given past history, I'm not gonna lay money on it.
Yeah, and again, like the comeback, the whole comeback thing, quote unquote comeback thing. I thought Mickey Rourke was after the wrestler, I was like awesome. And that didn't happen because he was so great in it, and then he was the villain in Iron Man 3, and then after that, it was just right down the Bemis.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Dan, always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure, and we got to do it a little bit sooner next time, okay?
Absolutely, man. Okay. Anytime.
All right, buddy. Take care.
You too.
There you go. Dan Epstein. You can read him in several magazines. RollingStone.com will have the Burt Reynolds article, and his two books about baseball are magnificent. All right, we'll take a break. We've got the news coming up after this.